All right, welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going to be taking a close look at kind of a fascinating trademark law case, and it involves Dessert Booty Inc. and Mara Fox.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole thing revolves around this phrase, love potion. And
Interesting.
yeah, and I think for you law students out there, especially those of you who maybe are interested in intellectual property, you know, this is a really cool case, I think, because it provides just such a like practical, real world example of the fair use defense.
Absolutely. And what makes the Dessert Beauty versus Fox case so instructive, I think, is that it really shows the sort of this tightrope walk between protecting a trademark and making sure that businesses can actually describe what they're offering. So we'll get into how the court sort of navigated those two competing interests.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just to sort of lay out the heart of the dispute here, Mara Fox, she registered Loved Potion as a trademark way back in 1995. And it was specifically for her perfumed essential oils.
Got it.
And then you fast forward 2004, you've got Dessert Beauty Inc. DBI enters the market with their beauty products, and they start using this phrase, love potion fragrance, and they even use the phrase belly button love potion fragrance. So you can see how this would lead to a legal challenge from Fox. But the big kind of key takeaway here that we're going to be exploring today is that DBI actually won
Interesting.
this case.
Wow.
They prevailed. They were able to successfully argue the fair use defense.
Okay.
And Fox's counterclaims were dismissed. So we really want to kind of dig into how did that happen
Right.
and why is that such a significant ruling?
It is a significant ruling because it really does highlight that trademark protection isn't like absolute, that you can't just like monopolize every evocative phrase out there, especially if it's like genuinely describing a quality or a characteristic of your product. Now, so this case gives us some good insight into where that line is.
Exactly. And so let's kind of set the stage here a little bit. You know, like we said, back in 1995, Mara Fox, she gets her trademark for Love Potion. Specifically, it covers perfumed essential oils. And that specific category, that's going to be important to keep in mind as we go forward. And then, you know, a few years later in 2001, she files for incontestability. Now, for our future legal eagles out there, what is the big deal about incontestability in a trademark dispute like this?
That's a really good question and a critical point to understand. I mean, basically, incontestability really kind of beefs up a trademark owner's rights. It means after 5 years of continuous use, after you've registered it, the validity of that mark, the registered mark, can't really be challenged on certain grounds, with some limited exceptions, of course. But so Fox wasn't just holding like a regular trademark. She had one that was pretty legally solid.
So she's got this really strong trademark. And then 2004 rolls around. DBI comes on the scene. And they launch their beauty products, and they're using this love potion fragrance. And it's interesting because DBI, they actually initiated the lawsuit. It wasn't they weren't, you know, kind of on the defensive right from the start.
Interesting.
So why is that notable?
Well, that's a really sharp observation, I think, by being proactive and going for what's called a declaratory judgment. They were basically asking in the court to make a ruling. Say, hey, our use of love potion, this is not infringement. And that's often a strategic move, to sort of get ahead of a potential lawsuit and kind of control how the legal story unfolds. It can give businesses a lot more certainty going forward.
So we've got Fox. She's got this strong, incontestable trademark. DBI comes along. They're using a similar phrase. This brings us to the central legal question here. Did DBI's use of Love Potion, was a trademark infringement against Fox?
Yeah.
And could they successfully use this fair use defense?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the big question in any trademark infringement case is there a likelihood of confusion among consumers?
Yeah.
Like, are people going to be confused about where these products are coming from?
Yeah.
That's the core issue.
Right.
However, even if there was, you know, some chance of confusion.
Yeah.
The fair use defense, if it applies to the situation, that could actually protect EBI from being held liable.
Okay, so let's dig into this fair use defense a little bit. Yep. It sounds like a pretty powerful tool.
It is.
But it's got some specific requirements, right?
It does. It does. So the Lanham Act, this is the law that we're talking about here.
Okay.
It lays out a 3-part test for what's known as descriptive fair use.
Okay.
So for DDI to win with this argument, they had to show the court that, one, they were using Love Potion, not as a trademark, to identify their brand.
Okay.
Two, they were using it in a way that just described the product.
Got it.
And three, they were using it in good faith.
Okay, so let's unpack that first part, other than as a mark.
Right.
So how did the court figure out whether DBI met that standard?
Yeah, so they looked at how DBI was actually presenting this phrase, Love Potion Fragrance, on their packaging and in their marketing. And this is really important. DBI, they put their own brand name, Dessert, front and center, along with their logo, Love Potion Fragrance.
Yeah.
It was there, but in a smaller font.
Got it.
And the court basically said that this visual presentation was telling consumers, hey, this product is from the Dessert brand.
Okay.
And Love Potion is just describing the smell.
Okay.
Or the intended romantic effect of the fragrance.
Right, right.
It wasn't like DBI's own brand name.
Right. So it was more of a like an adjective describing, you know,
exactly
what the fragrance was like.
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to build a brand around Love Potion. Yeah. It was just describing the qualities.
Exactly.
So that leads us to that second part. The use in a descriptive sense.
Right.
How did Love Potion qualify as descriptive in the way that DBI was using it?
Yeah. So the court decided that Love Potion, when you're talking about a fragrance,
yeah.
it just naturally makes you think of romantic things.
Yeah.
Allure, attraction, you know, like a magic potion that makes people fall in love.
Right, right.
So DBI was using that common understanding to tell people about the effect or the character of their fragrance.
Right.
And this is different from how Fox was using Love Potion.
Okay.
Which was, you know, as the main name for her oils.
Right.
It was her brand name.
It's the difference between saying, you know, this fragrance will make you smell like a Love Potion.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus this is the Love Potion brand.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, that seems like a pretty crucial distinction.
It is.
So then we get to that third element, the good faith use. This one feels a little trickier.
It does.
Yeah. So how did the court decide if DBI was acting in good faith?
Yeah, this is where the legal stuff gets pretty interesting.
Okay.
You know, Fox, she argued that DBI couldn't have been acting in good faith because they didn't do a trademark search.
Oh.
Before they launched their Love Potion fragrance products.
Interesting.
But the court didn't buy that argument.
Huh.
You know, well, it's usually a good idea to do a trademark search.
Sure.
And it can be evidence of good faith.
Yeah.
Not doing one isn't automatically bad faith.
Okay.
The court didn't see any real proof that DBI was trying to trick consumers.
Right.
Or intentionally cash in on Fox's Love Potion trademark.
So they were really focused on like what was DBI's main intention
exactly
in using that phrase.
Yeah. Was it just to describe their product?
Yeah.
Or were they trying to take advantage of Fox's, you know, brand?
Right. So even if DBI used a similar phrase, their intention was to describe, not to infringe.
Exactly.
Okay, so Fox didn't just let this go. She filed her own counterclaims.
Right, she did.
What did she do?
So she countersued claiming trademark infringement, both under federal and state law.
Wow.
And she also claimed what's called tortious interference with prospective economic advantage.
Oh.
Basically saying that DBI using love potion fragrance
yeah.
was hurting her business and preventing her from growing.
And how did those counterclaims do, given that DBI already won on this fair use defense?
Right. Well, ultimately, they were all dismissed by the court.
Okay.
Because the court had said, look, DBI's use of love potion,
right.
this is protected under fair use.
Mm-hmm.
So Fox's infringement claims couldn't really stand.
Yeah, if it's fair use,
right.
it can also be infringement.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, now what about WI's initial counterclaim?
Oh, yeah.
Where they actually tried to argue that Fox's love potion trademark was too generic, like it should be canceled completely?
Yeah, yeah.
That seems like a pretty aggressive legal strategy.
It was a bold move.
Yeah.
So they wanted to cancel the whole trademark.
Why?
Saying that love potion had become like a common term for any romantic fragrance.
Yeah.
So Fox shouldn't have exclusive rights to it.
Interesting.
But once DBI won on their fair use argument,
yeah,
they dropped that counterclaim.
They did, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good example of how legal strategy can change during a case.
Yeah.
Like, why keep spending time and money
right.
trying to invalidate the entire trademark
right.
when they could already use the phrase?
Right, exactly.
In the way they wanted to.
And then there was also that tortious interference thing going on.
Oh, right, yeah.
Where DBI said that Fox was interfering with their business.
Yeah, so DBI claimed that those cease and desist letters that Fox sent them and some of her public statements about the whole dispute were tortious interference with their business.
Okay.
But the court dismissed this claim, too.
Huh. Why?
Well, basically, the court said that Fox was just trying to protect her trademark. You know, sending cease and desist letters,
right.
speaking out to defend your trademark.
Yeah.
Those are generally seen as okay things to do.
Okay.
And they don't usually rise to the level of tortious interference.
Okay. So in the end, DBI, they won a big victory here.
Yeah, they did.
Fox's counterclaims, they were unsuccessful. So for all of our law students listening, what's the big takeaway?
Right. What did we learn?
Yeah. From this case.
Yeah. I mean, this case is a really, really good example of how the descriptive fair use doctrine
right.
works in trademark law.
Yeah.
It shows us that trademark rights, they're not absolute. And that we need to balance them with the right of businesses to accurately describe their products.
Right.
So even if a word is part of someone else's trademark, competitors can still use it.
Okay.
If they're just using it descriptively, not as their own brand name, and if they're doing it in good faith.
And it really highlights that key difference we talked about earlier.
Yes.
You know, that consumers might know the trademark exists, but if the other company is using the phrase descriptively
right.
and they're not trying to be sneaky about it,
it
can be totally legal.
Exactly.
The point isn't to get rid of every association in the consumer's mind. It's about making sure they're not confused about where the product's actually coming from.
Exactly. Yeah. The court said, look, consumers might think of love potion and romance.
Sure.
And Fox's product, you know, kind of plays on that too.
Yeah.
But DBI, they clearly showed their own brand.
Mm-hmm.
They used love potion in a small way just to describe the product.
Right.
So it's unlikely that consumers would think DBI's products were actually made by Fox.
Right. So this Dessert Beauty versus Fox case, this is a big one.
It is.
For understanding the limits of trademark protection and this fair use defense.
Yeah. That's a good reminder. That trademark law, it's there to protect brands and prevent confusion.
Right.
But it's not meant to give companies monopolies on common descriptive words.
Right. Well, this has been a really interesting deep dive.
It has.
Into this whole legal battle.
Yeah.
It's a really good example of these trademark law principles.
Yeah. And it brings up a good question for our law students.
Yeah.
How does a ruling like this
change
how companies think about naming their brands?
Mm-hmm.
Should they focus even more on choosing names?
Yeah, yeah.
That are unique and not descriptive?
Right.
And what about the ethics of using words that are similar to existing trademarks, even if they think it's fair use?
Yeah,
Like, those are important things to consider.
Yeah. Those are some really great questions for anyone who's thinking about going into intellectual property law.
Absolutely.
And if any of you are interested in learning more about this, you know, we really encourage you to check out other cases where the fair use defense has come up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's used in lots of different industries.
It is.
It's a really important part of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it has huge real world implications for businesses.
Absolutely.
So, thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next time.
See you later.